Call from the Doll on Kerry Today with John Downing.
Yeah, John, good morning to you. I almost don't know where to start with the week that we've had, both for Kerry politically and nationally. But we might as well start with Jackie Healy-Rae and the very fact that Jackie Healy-Rae was in studio this morning and not Michael Healy-Rae. He's human, is what he's saying, and he's pretty low after the week.
Yeah, I listened with great interest. A very fine performance, I'd say, by any standard, by Jackie Healy-Rae Jr. Very much his grandfather's grandson, so to speak. And yes, I suppose it is a point, and I've seen it a long time, so have you. One of my forerunners in the job in writing about politics in the Irish Independent, Chris Glennon, used to say politics is a cruel trade. And it is. It takes a toll. And I suppose there is an entitlement there to a breather and an acknowledgement that it takes a toll on family, it takes a toll on people. It's a tough business. It was a very tough couple of weeks. Stuff came out, quite surprisingly and quite intensely. The intensity of it all was the surprise, I suppose. We knew there were problems there. Anybody with an eye in their head. And this is universal, by the way. I'm just reading there about Belgium, and they're going into crisis mode. Because there are demands for energy grants and supports and so on, and the current Prime Minister says we'd love to do all that, but we haven't it. We have no money. So I think that maybe to broaden things out a little bit and say, well, we are in a somewhat more fortunate position here for that. A brief period, I would argue. Anybody who has lived through the last crash, we had loads of money, and then one day, like the tide coming in Ballybunion, we were suddenly inundated with debt and crash and all sorts, and those days could very easily come again.
Yeah, they certainly could. What do you make of the reasoning or the explanation given? Despite the fact that Michael Healy-Rae on this program several times said, my word is my bond, we're in it, we won't waver when other politicians will, we're doing a deal for Kerry, it's all about delivery. And then Jackie Healy-Rae this morning says our first loyalty is to the word we gave to the Kerry people to represent them, and the leader wasn't listening, so we had to jump.
I struggle with that, and I think a lot of people will, but you kind of pays your money and you take your chances. There is a thing about politics. Government is far more difficult. It's slower. It involves unpopular choices. It is far easier to be on the outside, looking in and saying, being right about everything that's wrong, instead of going into the more difficult business of seeking difficult remedies that will involve disappointing people and supporters. So there are choices to be made here. I suppose rule number one, survive, stay in the game. I think the Healy-Rae organization, which is unique and formidable in the country, we're generally looking at this and saying, electorally, we are going to struggle seriously here. The longer we stay in government, therefore we're out. But there was a contrast. I know the times were different. A contrast to Jackie Healy-Rae going in supporting Bertie Ahern's three-legged stool initially in 1999, 2002, and staying the course and frequently saying, look, we work through difficulties. There are never any guns to heads. There are never any high noons or demands. This or we're out of here, that never occurred. So, admittedly, I think even for adjusting with the times, the Healy-Rae organisation in Kerry is very different to what it was under Jackie Healy Ray. Ireland's a very different place, but certainly your point that future engagement in by the Healy Ray organisation in government will be looked at sceptically by whatever group comes
it's,
in.
It's clear from what Jackie would say, they want to govern again. They enjoyed it, they worked hard, they felt they could do a lot of good. But will they ever be trusted again by any party after what's happened here?
It's hard to see. It's hard to see. I mean, I suppose in the end, Dáil arithmetic is what counts. But I would imagine any grouping, would say a Sinn Féin led or you know, a left, more left leaning grouping coming in, would be looking at other options ahead of the Healy Ray option. You could certainly say that with confidence.
Is there an untold story here, John, just finally on this issue before we get to others, an untold story of the relationship between Michael Healy Ray and Danny Healy Ray politically? Because as I said, the supposition was that Dan, and the political analysis from some would be, and it was copper fastened by Minister Norma Foley saying, look, this was always a 2-for-1 deal. Everyone knew it was a 2-for-1 deal. If one goes, then another goes. Jackie was trying to explain it away by saying, oh, sure, he's voted on other things. I said, no, not on a key, you know, confidence motion or financial bill or the budget. They were always in lockstep. When they weren't, he was pulled overboard. And he says there was no row or no disagreement in relation to it, but something changed from I'll work within government to I have to leave after Danny clearly wasn't going to vote confidence in the government.
Well, I suppose in all families, Gerry, there's a family dynamic, there's sibling rivalry. They are rather different people and they have a different style of doing politics. Surprisingly, when you observe the two of them closely in the Dáil chamber, the short answer is that I'm not entirely sure. I mean, this has been many times speculated upon. Back in 2016, for example, when Enda Kenny was pulling together his minority coalition, including independents, it was widely believed that there was a cabinet seat on the table for Michael Healy, a full cabinet seat on the table for Michael Healy Ray at that stage.
And Danny came on this programme and said, over my dead body, will I vote for Enda Kenny? And that was the end of that.
It would appear so, yes. That is received wisdom. You know, we'll be waiting for archives and correspondence, I suppose, to get 100% confirmation of that. But I think it is reasonable to join the dots here and say, yes, that is the lie of the land in Kilgarvan.
Politically, the moves have started already, and I suppose keeping Kerry for a moment, we see the announcement that Danny Healy is to lose his position on the Agricultural Committee as part of the overall deal of being in government, and it's going to be handed by Mary Butler to Michael Cahill. So there are winners and losers. And looking politically, have things got much easier now for Michael Cahill? He's now the only government TD in South Kerry. He doesn't have to worry about announcements being made first by the Healy Rays over his head as part of any deal.
Well, yeah, he certainly, it's advantage Michael Cahill, yes, in this one. Mind you, those bouts will go on, and he knows, and his father before him, how formidable the Healy Rays can be when they're at it. But yes, advantage Michael Cahill, one up for Ross Bay, I suppose. And perhaps it will make life somewhat easier for Norma Foley also, because she won't have that noisier, more dissident voice coming out of government. At least, of course, the tone will go up, but it won't be credited as coming from inside the government camp. It will be interesting to see whether the intense rivalry, that may be a nice way of putting it, between Pa Daly and the Healy's Ray will persist, or what character that will take on in the new dispensation. But certainly change. And there is a loss for Kerry, despite Jackie Junior's eloquent arguments, well-framed arguments there. A loss for Kerry in that Michael Healy-Rae was no ordinary junior minister, and you literally walk the corridors of power in positions like that. Walking up and down the corridors, there's all kinds of access. You can waylay a senior minister, catch him or her by the sleeve and say, listen, there is a thing we need. There is something that could be done relatively easily here. So you know, access is the key word there, which has been lost.
Yeah, certainly is. And with that in mind, I suppose the question then goes to, I suppose, John Sinn Féin and Pat Daly. It's a good week for them, isn't it? They got a scalp. They put the motion down at the right time, put the pressure on, politically speaking.
They certainly got another squeeze out of it. They managed to land a few punches. They managed, again, to raise the question of home heating oil. Good time of the year from a government point of view, but hard to see, even if things improve in the Middle East, hard to see stability coming into energy supply lines anytime soon. Government needing to plan for the winter, and certainly an advantageous position for the opposition. Sinn Féin's fortunes in the opinion polls improving, but they haven't always benefited from discontent with government. So it will be interesting to see how that one plays.
Yeah, and John, how damaged is this government? Even internally, the row between Helen McEntee and Jim O'Callaghan, the wisdom of saying the defence forces are coming in, when at the end they weren't even really used, but that the damage was done by that language and that statement. And then I wasn't consulted. So is it a much wobblier government, or how damaged is the government after the week they've had?
Wobblier might be a bit excessive, but it has shown the tensions that were there and heightened them. Of course, talking about bringing in the army was a shocking error and probably the worst thing that the government did. I mean, part of the criticism of government in this really amounts to them having been slow to figure out what they were going to do and doing it. But the talk of the army, you know, it's socially and politically a complete taboo. We don't do that kind of stuff. And it's not, we're a small community, a small country. We don't resort to the jackboot, so to speak. And of course, the biggest flaw in talking about calling in the army was that the army don't have the resources to offer huge support to the Gardaí. In the end, the Gardaí, their approach to it, while slow, was proportionate and in the end effective.
It worked.
And the big challenge for them would be this very probably will recur in some shape or form, hopefully not to the same extent, but their big challenge will be to be prepared and planned to try to respond effectively and more swiftly if there is a next time.
Yeah. Micheál Martin marches on, John. What do you make of this? Do we even call it a heave? The discontent, the three, I don't know, we had the five-a-side gang with Brendan Griffin and Owen Murphy and co. a couple of years ago in Fine Gael. There's three amigos now. Or as one political wag said to me during the week, the rugrats.
Yeah, and the young brats or the young Turks, depending how you want to look at this. It's another bell ringing for Micheál Martin in the background. He'll be 66 years of age in August. He's at this 15 years. To cut to the chase here, I don't see him being in the Taoiseach's chair this time next year. And I think there is a realisation that the man should see for his own benefit from a sort of gratitude thing, though gratitude is a very scarce commodity in politics, but more significantly from Ireland's point of view, that he should see out the Ireland's EU presidency July 1st, December 31st. And I think in the new year, 2027, we're going to be, Fianna Fáil will be in very serious leadership mode. The country right now don't particularly care who leads Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil people, of course, it's very important to them. As Malcolm Byrne of Wexford said yesterday, he's been a great, a very good Taoiseach through lots of difficulties. COVID, Ukrainian war, even the latest, though he has his critics. I actually think he wasn't that bad at all. I think we've set the bar far too high sometimes when new and strange difficulties come at us. But he has done well as Taoiseach, and I think the generality of people beyond the political bubble wouldn't thank Fianna Fáil for moving for change now.
Yeah. John, finally, look, are we in for more trouble here? We have an EU presidency come. There's every day now on social media, and there's a whole other discussion to be had about social media and politics and how it influenced the protests and who got involved. But they're talking about protesting this, that and everything. The unions are up in arms saying, well, if all we have to do is blockade a few ports, then that's what we're going to do. And we want money, and everyone else is having their own say. Are we in for more turbulent times? Are we heading back to the 1980s where there'll be a strike every week?
We could be going in that direction. Certainly the unions have a case when they argue about double standards. Unions, when they go to protest or strike or whatever, have to operate within the parameters of the law. They can't blockade, etc., etc.
Is that not because of the lessons we learned from the early 1980s when we were an economic basket case and we were, you know, crippled by lots of problems, not just strikes, but that's when all this was set up, wasn't it? To function properly?
Yes, and it does. Social partnership has, to some degree, been undermined. The hauliers, the farmers via the ICMSA, IFA, MOCRA, other organisations, at the table talking to government day on day, that has taken a hammering. Hopefully we're not headed back to the crazy, stupid, counterproductive days of the 70s and 80s. But yeah, you look at it, I mean, just look at the headlines today. Gas and electric going to go up probably next month. This is going to go on. Petrol and diesel, the beating heart of rural Ireland, they're just going to go back up again. This one ain't going away. And the terms of engagement have changed. So in terms of protests and national discourse. So, yeah, there are very rocky times coming, unfortunately.
Yeah. OK, John, we're going to leave it there. Thanks a million for taking us through all that this week on Call from the Dáil. We'll talk to you next week. That's John Downing there of the Irish Independent on Call from the Dáil. If you have a view, get in touch.